Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love, which shares a look at the awakening process so many people are experiencing now, and also a look at the universal laws of energy to further understand and improve our spiritual and our physical realities. I am delighted to welcome Dr. Monica Miller, who in her new book, Religion and Hip-Hop, explores the changing face of religion in today's culture by researching the odd, deviant, and outcast of our society in the hopes of showing us how religion is being remade. Hello, Dr. Miller, and thank you for joining us on Healing From Within.
Hi, Cheryl. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, Monica, as listeners of Healing From Within are well aware, my guests and I seek to learn more about who we are as energetic, intuitive beings living in a three-dimensional physical world and how we may apply the universal laws of energy for change and progress in order to create a happier and healthier, more productive life. You know, in learning more about ourselves in a self-investigative process, and as a college professor, you well know, we may come to understand the past, improve the quality of our own lives, and that of our world communities. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Dr. Miller will share her insights into the topic of religion, youth culture, and hip-hop, exploring data from controversial events like the IMUS controversy and recent texts by rappers who fashioned their books after Bibles, dance subcultures, and analysis on the declining significance of churches among youth, offering a bold proclamation that what we think is religious isn't so religious after all, suggesting that we might begin again. Dr. Miller is visiting assistant professor at the Department of Religious Studies at Lewis and Clark College and serves as a senior research fellow with the Institute for Humanistic Studies, Washington, D.C., and is co-founder of the first ever American Academy of Religious Group on Hip-Hop. Monica, I often like to begin my shows by asking my guests to think back to their childhood and to remember the goals or ideas or values or experiences that may have motivated them at that time and are still important in the work and lifestyle that they have today. In other words, what kind of kid were you and who influenced your life path or destiny? I kind of believe we're born with a plan and a destiny and interests and values that resonate deep within us and show itself sometimes at an early age. So think back for a minute.
When I was writing the first book, Religion and Hip Hop, I was at that time, I was a Mellon postdoctoral fellow in religion and popular culture at Lewis and Clark College in Portland, Oregon. And I stayed an additional year, and I served in the position of visiting assistant professor. And that was so interesting for me because Portland is, you know, one of those places where it usually gets cited as, you know, sort of being, you know, the Mecca, if you will, of, you know, no religion or irreligion or religious indifference. And so part of what I was investigating was looking at the remaking of religious rhetoric or the cultural performance of belief among young people in Portland, Oregon. Currently, I am an assistant professor of religion and Africana studies at Lehigh University. I just started my third year here. And I'm also the director of Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies.
All issues that this show talks about in many, many different ways over the course of all my esteemed guests who come on who are all authors.
Now, wonderful.
How did you first become involved in the study of religion?
Yeah, so thank you for that question. And going back to, you know, I love, Cheryl, that you open up with and ask, you know, what were you like as a kid, right? And it is a question that we normally don't ask. You know, I do a lot of public lectures, and I find myself at a lot of conferences and symposia. You know, I do a lot of media, and I talk to a lot of people. And it's usually a question that most don't ask. It's not one that we think of. So thank you for going, going back to the past, because the past is
Monica,
the present.
Monica, we are the sum total of all our experiences, and if we look deep into who we really are, we've never really changed very much.
My goodness.
we came in with a path, a pattern, and have just developed our interests along the way. So if you wish to tell us something about your childhood,
sure, we
can start there, or we can go on to the question about how did you first become involved in the study of religion.
Yeah, and it's connected, and you're right. And, the cultural and life change is so interesting. It ebbs and it flows, and it always does remind us, I think, Cheryl, that the past is indeed present. I grew up, I'd like to say that I was an eclectic child.
That's a good description.
I was an eclectic child. My father was in the service, and so for a good portion of my early childhood, we lived in Japan. My dad was also involved in martial arts, interestingly, where he became a Shihan in jiu-jitsu. He currently still lives in Japan. He just opened up a dojo. And so the latter, years were spent, in a very small town in Long Island. And, in fact, it's on the North Fork. It's called Southold. It is beautiful and vineyards and beaches, but it's also not that diverse, right? And so I grew up as one of the few students of color at Southold High School. And I would like to, how should I frame this? Because I don't want to pathologize, but I don't want to also offer too much hyperbole. Growing up, I my school was small. I graduated with, I don't know if it was even 30 kids, if that. And so I feel like I got a private education, although it was a public school, right?
Mm-hmm.
My mom was a single parent with three girls. As my mom says, I was the monkey in the middle child.
Oh.
And I was always very curious about things, right? And so I definitely was precocious and inquisitive. And one of the things, I like to give that, backstory of my mom being a single mom with three girls, so that's a lot to handle, although we had a whole lot of help from my grandparents who lived just a few minutes down the street. So I do have to give the grandparents a big shout-out, and I know my mom would, too, if she was telling this story. but as a single mom, I don't know if it was a result of, allowing us the flexibility and the space to think for ourselves, or if it literally just kind of came down to my mom being very busy trying to jumpstart her career, trying to provide for three girls, really trying to, after one does after a divorce, right, like trying to remake their life and pick up the pieces. My mom had been a housewife. She also had, different careers before getting married, and also had various jobs while married. But for the majority of her time, she saw her job as sort of facilitating the household, and that is a job in and of itself, as we know, right? That's a lot of work. And so my mom gave us a lot of space to think for ourselves, right? Again,
well,
she could have just
Monica,
been...
I think she gave you the greatest gift we can give our children,
yes.
Which is not to give them our beliefs and mm-hmm. our fears, but to allow them to discover on their own what it is that makes life so wonderful for them.
Mm.
So I want to say you also wrote you never imagined yourself as a scholar in religion. In fact, you wanted to be a lawyer.
Yes.
But became very interested in human behavior and exploring why people do and think and choose the way that they live their lives. So, I want to say that most of my guests and I have a lot of coincidences, because I feel they're guided to the show and to the message that the show has. And it sounds like that, because I thought I'd be a lawyer, but instead I married one. And I come from three girls, and my mother raised me pretty much the way your mother raised
That's
you.
She really
was very independent. And I have studied these concepts of who we are, where we come from, what's life all about, and the universal laws of energy, or our spiritual and dual nature as physical and energetic beings. So we came to have the same type of eclectic childhood as you mentioned, which I think is great, and which I express to our listeners out there. You know, you don't have to mold your children into little replicas of yourself. They have their own soul needs, and they must be allowed to follow their own path. And what your mother and my mother were able to do for us was a great gift in actuality. So let's
That's
go.
beautiful, Cheryl. That's exactly, I have been thinking about that. And when I talk about my childhood and my mom, that is, again, right, there's pragmatics involved in being a single mom with three girls. And who knows, maybe she was just busy. And so what I read as a child and growing up as like her giving me flexibility literally could just have, sort of for her, been more akin to, well, there is only but so much that I can do on one person. And, so I've got to trust that these kids are
Well,
going to explore and are going to ask questions and come to me for things.
as it worked out, it was in your best interest. Now, as a child, I felt that the religious institutions were very much functioning from old belief systems and were rigid and unchanging. And I felt, I didn't know how to express it as a child, but in my own little way, I would have little prayers to God and talk to God, and I felt this personal connection was perhaps more worthwhile and empowering than some of the structure and belief systems that to me seemed a little antiquated. So it took a long time to realize that my sensitivities to energy and people and places and my heightened intuition were a way for me to make this personal connection. And now I do energy healing work and readings for people when I download information from that higher sphere or dimension of life beyond here. So
It's really interesting. You're really
we're looking for the same understanding of how to find the greater part of ourselves and not to be too burdened by the patterns or socialization process of our family or educational process, right? So we can be free to understand and be just who we are, pretty
Yeah, you know, it's,
loving and
yeah.
compassionate people, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's, it's funny. There's a lot of synergy as you talk. I hear, I can definitely, the shape again, right? Like of my childhood and how my mom sort of molded us and also didn't mold, right? Like as you mentioned before, sometimes we overmold. And being a professor and interacting with young people and students, whether they're, 18 or whether they're 24 or 25 years old, it's interesting that they have to come to, the space of university life to try and unmold that which they have been overmolded in. And so,
Absolutely.
for me, that intersection of religion and hip hop meets up at that crossroad, that crossroad of the critical questioning and not giving up on asking, as Dr. Pin likes to say, the hard questions of life, right? But also on the other hand, being this, young woman of color in a mostly, very white place, very white town, it was hard for me because I grew up in a particular culture where I saw myself as not different, but yet also as I got older, that like the differences became more prominent and that other people were noticing differences, but that I became curious. So at 13, I'm reading all sorts of autobiographies, of course, the classics, Martin and Malcolm, and but I'm also reading like Angela Davis and Astonishing Quorum. I'm reading politics. I'm reading about Islam. At 13, I'm just this very strange child who is interested in reading across a variety of hotly sort of contested discourses, and so my mom always encouraged reading. That's one of the things that I love that she did. Now, when we lived in Japan, Cheryl, my mom practiced Buddhism. And so while we were there, although my mom was raised in the black church, like, there's, something about being in the space that she found herself where for her she felt at home in Buddhism. Now, when my parents got a divorce and my mom, moved back when we relocated back to Long Island, New York, my grandparents were helping us a lot, as they said. We lived with them for 8.5 years before my mom could finally get on her feet to purchase her own home, and we had our own rooms then, and all of that. That we went back to the black church, and I'm not sure if it was because my mom, you know, I don't know if she had a kind of crisis of faith. I don't know if it was because she was also trying to pick up the pieces of her life, or if we were just being respectful to my grandparents.
Well, let's think about that for a minute. First of all, I just recently did a show on Buddhism by an author who wrote, I Met a Monk. Now, she grew up in a spiritual community, and her mother was a medium like me. Her grandmother was a medium like me. And she had questions, and she wanted to see religion and life from a different perspective. So she invited a Buddhist monk to come to her house, and there was a group of 15 people present for a period of 8 weeks. And this monk, he said, Buddhism is not so much a religion as it is a lifestyle and a way for self-investigation to know who you are and to know how to improve the quality of your life. I'm not even a teacher. I will just say things to you, and what resonates with you, you may take and try out for yourself and use it if it works for you. So I kind of like that, and I kind of think the young people in hip-hop today, perhaps, are looking for that openness, not to so much be guided to do things a certain way, but to have the feelings within them, the empathy, the compassion, and the love of life that they can receive from the music. So it's interesting you said that, but I want to ask the next question. Aren't all religions pretty much the same?
Ooh, that's a, now my scholarly hat comes on. I'm like, you know, one thing I can say, and while we're on the topic of, you know, so again, I have this eclectic, you know, sort of childhood, and my mom just allowed, we know that there's something about going to church that's either in respect to my grandparents, but my mom never forced us to go to church. My mom, I think when we were, maybe when I was about 15 or 16, like, she pretty much was like, you know, go ahead, and I don't want you to be locked in one thing, but ask hard questions. And now, again, my mom is a practicing Buddhist again, right? So she's gone back to her space in the world. But my co-author, Dr. Anthony Penn, you know, I mean, prolific author, scholar, and professor, one of the things I love about him, and he documents a lot of this in his recent autobiography memoir sort of book about his life. It's called Writing God's Obituary, How a Good Methodist Became a Better Atheist. And so at 12 years old, he preaches his, you know, first sermon. When he's 18, he becomes, I think, what was one of the youngest ministers to be ordained in his particular denomination. And then he goes on to graduate from Columbia, and then he does a PhD in religion, I think at Harvard University. Then he gets an MDiv before that, a Master's of Divinity. But he's someone who considers himself, you know, his description is, you know, he's a humanist. He's a black humanist. He's a black humanist atheist, but that he's also a scholar of religion. So he's interested in the varieties of religion.
Thank you, Monica, for that term. Black. You said he's a humanist, and that is what all religion should be teaching. They should seek to morally attune the general population to a more cooperative and successful way to interact for the good. That's what all religions should be doing. But however, we know religion is firmly connected to political, economical, and societal structures. In this way, they can sort of help certain groups succeed while others are neglected.
And
I'd like to say something about, you know, where religion, politics, education, and medical practices seek to constrict or restrict people from their normal flow of finding out about love and this connection to higher energy. We have a serious problem, as we can see in the wake of events in the ISIS attacks on Paris and elsewhere in the world, because religion or politics that choose to allow domination and killing are deviant, and we must work as a civilized world leadership to see that in the name of religion, this is not done. So we've got some serious issues happening in the world right now.
Well, you literally could just, I mean, we could, you know, that's like a billboard message for why students need to study religion, right? Like, but yeah, sure, you're exactly right. For me, I don't welcome students, into courses like religion and hip-hop, or really any courses, you know, that I teach here at Lehigh or elsewhere. What I invite students to do is to think about what, you know, that designator religion sort of entails, and for particular groups, and what politics are wrapped up into that. And when we say something is sacred or something is profane, I don't want them to think what is really holy or unholy about something. I want them to think about the political, right, distinctions that human interests are trying to shape as we sift and sort out and classify the social world. And so, you know, for me, you know, talk about religion is talk about society and life and politics. And I love how you mentioned flow, Cheryl, because, you know, going back to religion and hip-hop, you know, for me, I didn't listen to hip-hop growing up. Again, maybe I was influenced by the demographics of where I lived, and maybe the race, ethnicity, culture of where I lived. It was also a very, I lived in a bubble. Like, I don't even know if we've ever had a murder, maybe like 100 years ago where I'm from and where I still go back and visit my mom and my grandparents and my sisters now, and, you know, we didn't lock our doors, and, you know, it's just kind of like a world within a world. But as I got into about 10th or 11th grade, I wanted to develop my political voice more, and this is what brings me to hip-hop. Again, I was listening more to punk and rock and roll and, you know, the sort of heavy metal, but as I start to read, and as I'm reading the memoirs and the autobiographies of, you know, classic and historic and iconic figures, James Baldwin and others, right?
Yes.
I'm thinking about, you know, I'm thinking about worlds, and I'm thinking about the past and the present, and what's, you know, why do people do the things that they do? But I also started to feel the complexity of my own insider-outsider positions, right? Being in a space where I didn't see anyone that looked like me in power. I didn't see any of the teachers looking like me. I only saw the janitor looking like me. I only saw, you know, the lunch ladies looking like me. And that's fine, right? Like, that's fine. However, it also, I think, projects a particular naturalization that, you know, people who might look different, or people of a particular color or gender or from a certain class background,
or
that
religion,
they are always in service to the dominant group that has power.
Yes.
And
or
I wanted
a religion
to speak back to that, you know?
Yes, or a religion. People from a specific religion must function a specific way. Well, I really think that all young people, and in the name of education, should learn about everything and be able to accept everybody and everyone the way they are.
And that's really what, you know,
that's what education is about. That's what religion is about. Now, I want to just say, Monica, could it be that religious structures may not just recognize the components of this modern-day hip-hop population, who I believe seek in their own way to go deep within themselves to find the connection to each other, the music and love, and the spiritual energy of God. So in my new book, The Living Spirit, I said it a different way. Through my use of healing energy and music, meditation, and research into the different religions of the world, I wrote, perhaps through dialogue, I thought people could find new understanding of what Jesus lived and died for. Like other enlightened souls throughout history, Jesus believed in the solidarity between all brothers, all religions, all races and sexes. As Jesus had to rise above his agony and forgive his persecutors, so must we also do that in order to bring true peace and harmony to ourselves and to the world. This includes forgiving those among our friends and family who ostracize us for our metaphysical views, for they too know not what they do. So it seems to me that music, all music, comes from within the soul and is reaching out to embrace a higher dimension of life and love and ways to find ourselves. And I want to thank you.
Aww. Well, you know, Cheryl, thank you. You mentioned a word I think is really important. You know, so all of the, you know, it's I think, poetic, right, that, you know, Dr. Penn is not only someone who I consider a very close mentor, but I literally would not be studying what I study now had it not been for him, his work, his close guidance. And he, you know, he kind of serves as a whole lot of things, right, to a lot of different emerging scholars and students. But what he shows the academic study of religion, and what he shows the thinking and listening public, is that, look, he can be an atheist, he can be a humanist, He can be whatever he wants. He did not believe in religion, and that should not delegitimize his ability to be a scholar of religion, of philosophy, of theology. And, you know, well in 30 books in, you know, Dr. Anthony Penn is still providing the space for students to ask those hard questions of life and of the field and of history and of time and space. And you mentioned openness and feelings, and for me this is what religion and hip-hop brings together. This is what the public will find in Religion and Hip-Hop, Mapping the New Terrain with Dr. Penn and Bernard Bumby Freeman, but it's also one that you can see at the nexus of when hip-hop forms. It's, you know, it's the axis mundi, right? Like we place its origins in, you know, 1973. Of course, it's got a much bigger history, wider history, but in terms of, you know, being representative, like the local story, it comes of age in 73 in the South Bronx, 1520 Sedgwick Avenue. And you mentioned the term flow, and I think that's really, really important because hip-hop, from the beginning, many scholars miss this. This is what me and Dr. Penn and having, you know, also a rapper who's an insider to hip-hop speaking with the academic, right, speaking about their own experiences, what they think about when they create. You know, we've got pieces in this book about Erykah Badu. She's someone who I really connect with. She talks a lot about creating, and she talks a lot about, you know, catharsis. She talks a lot about connection. When you mentioned flow...
And
that's
there
hip-hop.
We are. That is...
When you mention flow...
That is
you,
life.
Flow
that
is the technique of
life. Creativity. Creativity.
Yeah,
yes.
Flow is the technique of life for hip-hop, which is why I believe from the very beginning, although we have all kinds of scholars out there, you know, and journalists who will reduce the religion in hip-hop to just, you know, an institutional thing or just Christianity, it's not that. It's actually much more syncretic. It's much more robust. It's much more strategic. And when we look at the early forerunners of hip-hop, they were, you know, there was this philosophical kind of eclecticism there. It was syncretic. They were mixing. Think about how hip-hop remixes and samples. They weren't putting the traditions in competition. They actually were creating, you know, taking what already existed, just like they did with hip-hop. You take the raw materials that life deals you, right? When you're on the underside of capitalism or you're on the underside of post-industrialism, you take the scraps of life and you make something out of nothing, right?
Wow.
So humans create in that way.
Yes, yes.
And this is what hip-hop did. This is what, for us, is fascinating about religion and hip-hop. Not only the technique and the flow, but the flow for hip-hop becomes energy. That energy is created only by bodies. It's not as metaphysical as people think, that you need bodies to have energy. In that way, it is a very humanist thing to have bodies forming what hip-hop calls the cipher, which is where the event happens, right, which is where flow happens. That flow is also part of what we try to do in religion and hip-hop. The pieces, although they all come from different perspectives and they're tackling different topics, the Mapping the New Terrain is really us looking at the flow of religion and hip-hop, you know, its method. You know, part of the method that I like of flow is that it doesn't compete. It doesn't set traditions that have historically been put in an antagonistic relationship. Hip-hop kind of settles that score on the sacred and the profane. The scholar or the philosopher might have a problem with it, but hip-hop makes use and makes do, right? It makes a way out of no way with whatever it can get its hands on. And if that's Zulu Nation, then that's fine. If it's Islam, then it's fine. If it's Christianity, it's fine. If it's New Age, then it's fine. And they put all of that together, and they make, you know, their cultural output really comes from that. So this is what we're trying to highlight, that rich density, that robust texture to the religiosity.
Let me then say that hip-hop is then a good way, not the only way, as no religion is the only way.
Well, I wouldn't even call hip-hop a religion, actually. I would call it that it's
Trying to be young people finding a way to approach the best things in life and themselves through music. I think that's what you're trying to research here. I want to thank you, Monica Miller, author of Religion and Hip Hop, for an updated search into modern-day youth culture and the effects of hip hop in exploring the concept of self, oneness, and unity to universal life. For more information, please go to religionandhiphop.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing from Within, we have become aware of the changing face of religion by studying hip-hop and youth culture. On every page, Monica Miller strives to share the importance of why attention to religion on popular culture matters from both an expert and layman's perspective. Monica has written in the concluding chapter of her book, what best expresses part of the reality, presence, and forward-moving hope to continue to evolve and understand our spiritual and physical world, finding universal source within our creative expression of music, art, and the youth culture of today. Monica writes, at these times when even hip-hop has contributed to the existing condition, it has learned to point the finger at itself and admit its own culpability. Hip-hop culture sees itself not as perfect or infallible, but as an ever-learning community open to outside opinions and constructive criticism. We within hip-hop culture are constantly trying to learn more about the world around us, as well as our place and duties in it. This is necessary for self-improvement and for the development of useful answers to the large and hard, even religious questions of life. Who are we? Why are we here? And it is only through this type of work that true growth can be achieved. Monica and I would ask you to become the evolving people of an expanding world of love and infinite wisdom in search of our personal divinity or soul life, connected to each other and to universal source, that we continue to allow, accept, and surrender to the best qualities within each of us, and to help humanity rise above the imperfections and limitations of these lower emotions, such as greed, jealousy, extreme materialism, anger, fear, and anything that restricts our ability to love and appreciate life in its higher state. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to my website, CherylGlick.com, to read and listen to leaders in the field of metaphysics, science, spirituality, medicine, the arts, and music, search within themselves and the world to find new ways for personal improvement and greater prosperity for everybody. Shows may also be heard on WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you.